podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jurgen has the Reds undefeated in the league. We're out of the knockout stage of the Champions League. We've advanced there. It wasn't the easiest few weeks for the Reds, but they've managed to navigate it unscathed. But we still have another massive, massive test to go against arguably our biggest rival up next here. I'm Armando Angulo. This is the Anfield Rant. Today I'm joined to discuss these resilient Reds with Tom Holmes, a writer for AI and a key piece of the Rate Don't Hate podcast over on the Anfield Index Pro channel, which if you don't have yet, you need to go subscribe. Tom, how are you doing, man? Thanks for making the time to join me today.
Yeah, no, it's great to be on. Always great to get on new pods, to chat with new people and to, you know, just discuss the Reds in general.
Oh, no, awesome, man. And yeah, this is kind of a reboot for me for the Anfield Rant. We're just starting fresh and hitting it again this season, and hopefully we can make this something a little bit more regular. But yeah, Tom, let's jump right in. It's been a busy season for the Reds. Thick and fast the last couple of weeks. We have an injury crisis. We have United coming up. We have a run-in with City that's massive, massive, massive coming up. And I just want to start off by talking about what everybody's talking about. And let's talk about that midfield. Let's talk about the most vanilla midfield that I've ever seen and I don't want to ever see again. I mean, I get it. They got the job done against Napoli, but Ginny, Milner, Henderson, that's not sexy, man. It's not a look that I want, especially having the weapons we have on the bench.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, I'm not going to be offering anything too controversial here because I completely agree. I think it's very easy to look at a match like the Napoli game where everything went perfectly with those three in midfield and say, you know, well, they've proven that those three are sort of, you know, our big names. Those three are our starters. Those three this, those three that. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily fair for a number of reasons. I think, you know, that three has worked sometimes. There are other occasions where it just hasn't worked. The Napoli game was one example of a situation where it worked really well, but then there have been countless examples where it hasn't worked at all. You know, I mean, against PSG away, it just didn't work at all. Against Napoli away, it didn't work at all. So, you know, we're in a situation here where, yes, those three played their part in that final result, but equally, they played their part in getting us in that situation in the first place. I think the other thing to notice is just because that was the midfield that Klopp picked and all three of them played reasonably well, and we obviously won the day, I don't think that necessarily is an endorsement for those three going forwards, because the first thing to note is that, you know, our best players on the day were our best players. They were Mo Salah, they were Virgil van Dijk, they were Alisson Becker. You know, the players you expect to step up in these big games. I thought Gini was really solid, but you know you're going to get that from Gini in those sorts of games. But, you know, I thought Henderson was probably our weakest player on the pitch, apart from, well, possibly Mane, depending on how you sort of judge Mane's finishing as part of his game, because obviously Mane had a really strong game overall, but then he misses, you know, 3-4 big chances, which ultimately could have cost us sincerely. But, you know, in terms of all-round play, you know, Henderson was one of our weakest components on the pitch. And I think, you know, it's all very well and good saying, you know, Klopp picked the right team, but do I think Liverpool would have crashed out of the Champions League if we'd started Fabinho in defensive midfield instead of Henderson? Not for a second. I think if you look at the midfield, I don't hate that midfield. I don't hate it. Certainly, I was a bit more pessimistic going into that game than I would have been otherwise. I really didn't think we had a chance of getting a 1-0 in that game. I just didn't think it was ever going to happen. Ultimately, I reckoned without the brilliance of our goalkeeper, and I reckoned without all the chances that we missed. I always thought this game was going to go one of two ways. I thought we'd either step out, step up, absolutely demolish them, win 3-4-0 and go through easily, or I thought we would scrape, sort of play for the 1-0, mess about a bit and then get caught and end up regretting it. And it almost ended up being both, weirdly, because we played well enough to win that game 3-0. We turned in the sort of performance that I thought was possible to sort of go and win 3-0, 4-0, get the game done, go through. But we didn't get the goals to back that up. And it nearly did end up being the scrappy 1-1 that crashed us out. But the goalkeeper had something to say about that as well. So it was a really weird game. It was a really weird performance. I think maybe obviously the biggest issues coming out of that game going forward are actually not with the midfield at all. They're with the defence. As you mentioned, we're now in a defensive injury crisis and losing both Matip, who was phenomenal on the night, and Trent, who's increasingly been a really important part of this Liverpool team, leaves us really short-staffed at the back, which is going into a busy period with a lot of tough games against a lot of good opposition, a really unfortunate situation for us to be into.
Right. And that's a good segue. And you mentioned Henderson, and with this being the worst player on the pitch against PSG, against Napoli, I totally agree. I feel like we've said that, I feel like that's been a recurring theme this season. A lot of times when Henderson's out on the pitch, he seems to be struggling this year. And he's the captain of the club. There's a place, there's games that he should be playing, but I just think against crucial games, crucial matchups against very talented athletic teams like Napoli, like PSG, we should be going with a more athletic, more physical side, and it's not like he's adding a lot right now. And with Henderson and this injury crisis, I want to see less of him. If we're going to have Lovren back there and possibly Klein, possibly Milner, I need Fabinho to be playing in these games, to shield, to be, a bit of a sweeper in front of them. Because let's be honest, man, Henderson, he doesn't give you the confidence that you need, especially with this injury crisis, especially with Lovren, arguably the world's greatest defender, or at least, he would tell himself that. But you need the help, Lovren and a new right back. That just, God, that scares the shit out of me.
I am worried and I'm not. I think the first thing to note is that Lovren has always been a better player when he's playing alongside Van Dijk. That is something you do have to say to him. So, I think what this injury, mini injury crisis has done is it's put a lot more pressure on Van Dijk to step up, which isn't necessarily a good thing because from what we've seen of Van Dijk, he doesn't necessarily play at his best when he's with Lovren, because in many respects he's got to do a little bit more covering. He's got to sort of handle the situation a bit differently when he's playing alongside Lovren. To go back to the Henderson point, I don't think Henderson's that bad. I don't think he's necessarily a catastrophe, but I do agree that the sort of the combination of Henderson and Lovren gives you understandable alarm bells. And I think the majority of Liverpool's best performances and best results this season have come with Fabinho and or Keita in the team. I think, you look at the midfield three, the only midfield three that's consistently worked has been Gini, Milner, Keita, and then you look at any midfield two with Fabinho in it, and that seems to work quite well as well. So I can understand why Klopp wants to throw Henderson into these sorts of games, because ultimately it's not necessarily about quality. It's about executing Klopp's ideas to the best of their ability. And Klopp wants players on the pitch who understand his idea the most, who want to sort of fit his idea the best. And the way I think that's been an issue this season is that up until that Napoli game, we haven't really seen Liverpool play the same way that they played last season. So in many respects, the sort of the Klopp vision hasn't been quite the same, which is why for me it made no sense to play players like Henderson, because if we're not going to play the sort of style that they're used to playing, then their experience doesn't really mean that much. Whereas in that game against Napoli, we did play a bit more like the sort of the fast counter-attacking play, a little bit more open style with a bit more pressing than we have done last season. And that's not to say it was necessarily our most Klopp performance. It was certainly one of our best performances, but that was certainly helped by, I thought, Napoli, particularly in the second half, very much played into our hands and very much played the open game, which they kind of had to an extent, because when it was 1-0 with half an hour to go, Napoli had to go for it because they needed a goal, and we obviously were able to pick them off. But I think equally, I think if you're looking forward, I think you need to be saying, look, who are our best midfielders? And our best midfielders are Fabinho and Keita. And I don't even want it to be an anti-Henderson thing or an anti-Milner thing. Right. I just think we've got two of the best lads in their position in European football. Because Keita, for me, he's been the best midfielder in the Bundesliga for 2 years now. And we've brought him in. And we want him to be in that team, because the quicker they're in the team and the quicker they're integrated, the better they're going to be. And Fabinho, again, he's a title winner. How many players in this side can we say are major title winners in the last couple of years with their team? It's Fabinho and I guess technically Milner if you want to go back a few more years. But so you've got two lads there who I think are potentially genuinely world class, and I don't think it's necessarily a coincidence that some of our best performances this season have come with them in the team. So certainly for me, I'd want them to be playing every week. I'd want them both to be playing as quickly as possible, and I'd want them both to be playing in the big games. Now I'm hoping we'll see that a bit more over Christmas, particularly because obviously we haven't got as many big Champions League games, which means Klopp will kind of say, you know, we can trust the likes of Henderson in the Champions League, but maybe in the league we'll go a bit more back to this Keita-Fabinho partnership. It's increasingly looked like it's going to work. So I'll be curious to see how we line up against United. I'll be curious to see how we line up against the likes of Arsenal in a couple of weeks' time. But I'm hopeful that going forward, Fabinho and Keita will feature. And just one thing I do want to sort of quickly add before we move off this topic is if you look at City right now, City have reached a point where they're starting to struggle a little bit, where they're starting to hit a bit of form that's a bit patchy and their midfield isn't quite working and they're having to sort of get De Bruyne back in the team. Whereas at the moment, we look like we're picking up form because we've got the options to rotate in these players. And we've got two lads here in Fabinho and Keita who look like they're going to be able to pick up their peak in the back half of the season. And that's a really nice thing to have because we've got two lads who are still sort of, maybe not still to come in, but we've got two lads that are sort of still to make their biggest impact because, you know, you've got the likes of Gini's already clocked 1,300 minutes. Milner's already played nearly 1,000 minutes. So you've got these two lads who can come into that midfield fresh and start to find their form. So we're in a situation here where we're actually top of the league and we're, you know, we're slightly ahead of City, but right now you'd say City are maybe about to go through, about to maybe hit a slight decline, whereas we're still on the up. You know, our best performances have only come in the last week or two. And, you know, we've got players in that team who are starting to find their form. So we can only really improve from here. And that's the most exciting thing for me, that you've got these two lads who are perfectly pitched potentially to go on a stonking run in the second half of the season, now that some of the stickier Champions League games are over, for the time being at least. And then City, on the other hand, have got to try and find a way to integrate the likes of Kevin De Bruyne back into their team and still pick up results. And obviously, you know, it's City you'd expect them to still pick up the results in the meantime, but they're looking increasingly like they're having to work for those results rather than sort of being in the sort of cruise control where we can just pitch up and beat anyone 4-0 mode that they were sort of earlier in the season.
Right. And, you know, like you said, I mean, we have these 90 million plus players in midfield who haven't gotten, a good stretch of games in, who are fresh, who are going to make a big difference, I think, as well, going into the Christmas period. I wanted to touch on two quick things that you mentioned about Klopp and Henderson knowing the system and knowing if he's the one that knows the system, if he's the one that's as experienced as he should be. And I tend to agree with you, but his performance in the first half against Napoli, he looked lost, man. He didn't look like he knew what the fuck was going on or what he was doing. He was abysmal. And if you have him in there because he fits the role or he knows what the fuck he's doing, how come he didn't know what he was doing? Secondly, on Lovren, you said he plays better with Van Dijk. That's cool. I don't say he doesn't. I'm not going to disagree with you, Tom. But he was on the pitch for about 15 seconds, ball watching, and that's how they got their chance. And Alisson saved him. So I don't care if it's Van Dijk. I don't care if it's Thanos. It doesn't fucking matter. It's still Dejan Lovren. He's ball watching. His head's in the clouds. As a physical player, I think he's good. I think he has all the qualities. I think he's has all the makings of a world-class center back. He just fucking, his head is not in it. I don't understand. He's not, I guess it's his focus. I mean, I don't know what it is. If anything, maybe he tries too hard.
I completely agree with both the points you've made there, particularly on Lovren. We'll come to Lovren in a sec. With Henderson, I do agree. Didn't think he was particularly great in that first half against Napoli. I thought he was okay in the second, to be fair to him. And, you know, I think maybe it was one of those, part of the Henderson thing is that these are the sorts of games where we play at our best because we're completely bypassing that midfield. And teams, and as a result, because we're so open, teams find a way to bypass it as well. And one of the things I've had is I don't necessarily think it's Henderson's fault if someone lobs a ball 40 yards over our centre backs, because, you know, I'm not sure what he's supposed to do in those sorts of situations. If it's sort of a flat ball along through the midfield, that kind of worries me. But when teams play over us, it's like, well, there's not a lot a defensive midfielder can do when we're getting lobbed over the top into the channels. You know, that's either on the lads ahead of him who are supposed to be pressing or the lads behind him that have got to be mopping it up. So that was a little bit of what it was in the first half. But I think, you know, and I think the thing is, we have these sorts of games and this is something that a couple of people have made the point. You know, we're speculating as to how Fabinho would perform in similar circumstances because we don't really know. Because Fabinho hasn't really played in a similar situation. Because he's been left out of the team for most of those games. So we assume Fabinho would be better in those positions, in those sorts of games where everything's a bit more chaotic, where there's no real control over the midfield and where our midfielders in particular, Henderson, can't really get a foot in. But what I would argue for that is, even if Henderson didn't necessarily turn in his best game, Napoli didn't really create anything until the last couple of minutes when Lovren came on. So, you know, as much as he might have not necessarily looked like he was playing particularly well, and I certainly don't think he was one of our key performers, as I've already said, you know, he wasn't costing us anything. You know, the bottom line is he wasn't out there giving away chances, because Napoli didn't really create anything until late on in the match. With Lovren, I did say, Tuesday night was a weird game. I went in with the attitude of, we're going to go out. There's nothing we can do about it. But then the longer it went on, the more I was like, this is going to hurt so much. It was just getting so infuriating. And then Lovren came on with a minute to go, and I was like, right, Lovren's come on with a minute to go. We know how this goes. We've seen this before. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be Lovren that costs us. And then lo and behold, he did. With Lovren, what I would say is that Dejan Lovren is one of the best defenders in the world for 88 minutes in a game, or 85 minutes in a game. But he's always got that 2 minute, that 5 minute spell in him where anything can happen, and you just don't know what's going to happen. And that's a real worry, because you've got that player who can frighten you. And I think this is a point that Ollie Emerson made on the Writers' Pod a couple of weeks ago, which was a really good point, which was, when you've got a player like Matip is probably a weaker defender than Lovren for the vast majority of a match. But he's the sort of player that you want coming in for the lesser games, because you know he's going to hit a consistent level across 90 minutes that's maybe slightly less good. Whereas with Lovren, he's not going to disrupt the level of quality, apart from he's prone to ginormous errors, and he's going to be prone to those errors no matter who he's playing against. So you may be in a bigger game, so you don't want him necessarily as a backup player, because he's that sort of player that you can trust right up until the moment when you can't. And the problem is, you never know when you're going to have a Lovren incident. And I think that's such a key point. You know, we could go in those. We're looking at Lovren for a spell of probably about 10 games now, playing at centre back alongside Van Dijk. And you know he's probably going to be fine for 7 or 8 of those, for the vast majority. But you don't know when the moments are going to come that he could easily drop you in it. And I, for what it's worth, I'm more confident now, knowing that we've got a goalkeeper behind him who can mop up a lot of mistakes, and we've got a centre-back next to him who can mop up a lot of mistakes. And I mean, look, I'm not the biggest Dejan Lovren fan, and it is a worry that we're going to have to rely on him consistently for a few weeks. But equally, I don't think he's a complete catastrophe. I think, you know, as long as he limits the mistakes that he makes, and as long as he makes them at the right times and the right moments, which is obviously nothing he has control over, but I feel as though we can manage, especially if we've got, you know, Fabinho ahead of him, Van Dijk beside him, Alisson behind him. You know, we've still got a lot of quality in that team. And I still think, and I think the other thing is, we can afford to concede a couple more goals as well. That's the other thing. As good as our defence has been, and as much as I'm enjoying the fact that our defence is really good, you know, if we concede a goal against Bournemouth at the weekend through a Lovren error, we still win that game 4-1. If Lovren makes a huge mistake, we concede against Watford, we still come through that one. And obviously, he did contribute to the mistake we made against Cardiff. We still win that one 4-1. So there's still a bit of scope for us to be a little bit less good defensively than we have been, even though we've been obviously spectacularly good. And the other thing is, we've been playing slightly differently this season, in that we've been a little bit more defence orientated. We've been able to shut down games slightly better at 2-0. But we have seen that when we actually do need to turn it on, in the Premier League mostly, but not quite as much away from home in the Champions League, but when we have needed to suddenly, oh, okay, we've actually got to play football here, we have been able to turn back to that sort of heavy metal attack rather than defence style of football a little bit more. And it has been the case that we've been able to survive any sort of rocky patches. So I do think there's plenty of reasons to sort of say, yeah, okay, we've got some issues going into these next few games. But as I said at the start, you know, we're hitting our top form now. The last sort of 2-3 weeks, I'd say since PSG away, which is obviously an abysmal performance, since then we've probably hit some of our best form of the season. So I, for one, I'm hoping that having Lovren in that team, even if Henderson does play, won't mitigate it too much.
No, I mean, those are all really solid points, you know, especially when we talked about Henderson and, you know, Napoli bypassing them with the passes and going over the top. You know, tactically, I'm not one that's really watching those minute things. To me, he was invisible. So that makes total sense. Let's move on though, Tom. Let's move on to United, arguably our biggest rival, coming up at tomorrow, 24 hours from now when we're recording this. It's a big, big game, man. United makes me uneasy, no matter how crap they are, no matter how good we are, vice versa. You could throw quality out the window against when it's United. It's just going to be a scrappy, a tough, vibrant game. But like, I don't expect it to be wide open. You know, they like to park the bus. They like to do those things. They're not good defensively, but they like to try. And it's just one of those games that sometimes it gets the better of us, I think, emotionally.
That's certainly been the case in recent years. They're now 8 league games without a win against United, and in the league, in under Klopp, that's the only Premier League team Klopp's not beaten yet. So it's not good. United have had our number. United have had our number, and it's really frustrating. I've got every year I have the confidence that this is going to be the year, and we just go and turn them over. And every year that ends up not being the case. I think we're different this year, though. I do think we are. You know, I think we've got a goalkeeper who is not gonna let us down when we need him. We've got a centre back who can bully someone like Romelu Lukaku. Which is kind of one of the weird things about last season's game was that Van Dijk didn't just stick himself on Lukaku and let Lovren get bullied, which I thought was very strange because this year especially, Van Dijk's been extremely good at, if we are going to be in a physical battle, just tanking it, just stepping in across and sort of taking the striker, which has been one of the estimates has worked really well. This is why I'd play Fabinho as well against United, because he's really good at latching himself onto a player and just sort of dealing with it, even though that's something Klopp doesn't necessarily like, because we saw last season, I can't remember who it was against, but Emre Can basically won everything in the midfield, and Klopp was like, it was driving me mental because Emre was having to win the first balls and the second balls because he was having to deal with the headers and then pick up the loose passes afterwards, and it was just driving Klopp mad. So that's the sort of situation I'm sort of looking at and going, maybe it's good that Trent isn't at right back in this game, because if United, depending on how United take on it, if they try and peel off and get physical against our fullbacks, it could be good that we have someone who's a little bit more physical in that area and doesn't get bullied quite as much. You just don't know. The problem we've had against United is that we've not been able to break them down in recent years, and this is why I think it's going to be very dependent on the team selection. We don't really know who Klopp's going to play in that midfield. You know, if he picks, I'd like to see him play both Keita and Shaqiri, if I'm being honest, but I'm not sure he'll. I'll be happy if he picks one of them, look at it that way. If he picks both, it's brilliant. I think he's more likely just to pick one of them. In terms of the front three, it's weird because this front three, none of them have scored against Man United in the league for us. None. Like, in Klopp's 5 league games, our only 2 goals against Man United have been a Milner penalty from a Pogba handball and then the own goal in the 2-1 defeat last year. So for some reason, we really, really struggle to score against them. And it can't just be a tactical thing, like you say, because there's been plenty of good defensive sides that we've come up against that we've been able to break down or been able to at least get one goal against, even in the last couple of years. So it can't just be that this United side are really good defensively, tactically, because, well, for starters, they're not. They're not a good defensive side. That's never been part of their MO. I think it is partly a mentality thing, and I'm hoping that that's why this season will be a bit different, because we've got the likes of Fabinho, Keita, Shaqiri, who are obviously new players anyway, but are confident players. We've got the likes of Van Dijk, who just won't take any nonsense. And obviously, we've got a keeper. That's always a big thing against United, you know, actually having a goalkeeper. So I think the issue is, you know, I've just reeled off a lot of good improvements that we've made, but equally, every year we seem to come up against United in a better position. Every year we seem to come up against United in a position where we should be beating them, and then every year we manage to find a way not to. So, I mean, look, I want to go and beat them 4-0. I don't want to mess about scrapping a 1-0 win. I want to impose our game on them, because too often in recent years we've let this United side dictate the way the football's going to be played. Too often we've let them play a back six and us pass the ball in front of them and get nowhere. I want us to go out there and bully them. I want us to go out there and demonstrate to them that our style of football, our way of playing football, is better than theirs. And that is something that we just haven't been able to do in recent years. And no matter how confident I am that we can do that, in practice it never works out that way. So it's going to be a very, very interesting game. But as usual, and my attitude going into these games is just get the result. As much as I always want a statement performance, and as much as against United especially, I really want a statement performance, the bottom line is we just need to get the result however we can. And if that means that we end up having to scum them a little bit, that's what it is. And I just hope that, I mean, a draw wouldn't be the end of the world, but I think for me, a draw is the absolute minimum. We cannot be losing to this team, cannot be losing to them.
No, absolutely. Like you said, has to be a statement game. We have to go out there, punch him in the mouth. If you ask me, we have to make a statement, not just to them, but to the rest of the league, that we're here for real. I mean, we're favorites with the bookies. We're favorites with, you know, probably with the neutrals and what have you, but it's just, as a Liverpool fan, you're just scarred. You just know that something, some bullshit's going to happen, and it's not going to be as straightforward as you want it to be, even though we could dominate that game and it could be a really sticky scoreline, you know, a lot like we saw against Napoli. And that's a big fear too, because the longer we let these teams stick around, it becomes one of those things. I don't know, Tom. I think we're going to go out there and win, but I can't be confident to say that we're going to smash them, because it's United, and like you said, it's a mental thing. It's definitely something that's ingrained, not just in the players, but in the fan base, because as fans, we're leery of this game. Nobody is overconfident about this game, and if they say they are, they're full of shit, Tom. But like you were talking about the midfield, we were talking about you wanting to see either Shaq or Naby, or both, ideally, with Fabinho, I would say. I would like to see them both as well. I don't know how, especially with, I think personally that we'll play Milner at right back, so that already excludes Milner from the midfield. I'd like to see all three, because I would like to see that fresh blood, somebody that's not played United in that shirt, players that are class players, that are gung-ho. I mean, Naby Keita is just one of the most exciting midfield players that we've had in a long time. The way he just drives with the ball, the way he picks passes, the way he gets himself in position. He was unlucky not to score a couple games ago when he had multiple chances, and Joe Hart made a wonderful save. Naby Keita is, I think, the linchpin in that midfield against a team that's going to park the bus like United is and like we expect them to. So Naby, I think, is a key. I would love to see Shaq, but I don't know if we'll see them both. We probably will see Shaq, because I get the feeling that Klopp trusts him a little better, or trust him with the system a little better in the league. So that all makes sense. I mean, he's used to English football. He's used to the league with Stoke and all that. But I don't know. I would like to see some new blood. I would like to see us go for it. I would like to see us, you know, kick them while they're down and go for the jugular and send a message to the rest of the league that we're here to stay, and send a message to City, who took care of the Ev today. Thanks a lot, Everton. But, you know, to go and send a message that we're here to stay for the long haul, because, you know, it's a fickle thing. Confidence is a fickle thing in the Premier League, because especially in such a tight race with City, because, you know, as a Liverpool fan, you read the timelines, you read Twitter, you're on social media, you see the meltdowns after a draw. Tom, we melt down after wins. So it's one of those things that, like, it's just culminating in this, like, combustible nuclear bomb that's ready to just go off, and nobody, even as good as things are, nobody can, like, just relax. And that, to me, is something that as a fan base we have to get over. Not just because, I mean, ultimately energy rubs off on players. They read these things, they see these things, they're human beings, it's in their face. I don't know. I'm one that says you got to think and create things into existence and feel confident, and confidence goes a long way. There's no reason why we shouldn't be confident, Tom. There's no reason why we as a fan base shouldn't be just over the moon with the way we're playing. I know it's not as gung-ho as it has been last year. It has been over the last couple of weeks. We're seeing that spark. We're seeing that dynamism. But as a fan base, we're undefeated in the league, Tom, and we're still uneasy.
I mean, that's part of that is just because of City, isn't it? I mean, you can't, as much as we want to put the City thing to one side and focus on ourselves, there is no getting away from the fact that we are facing possibly the greatest Premier League team of all time.
That's second to us.
Yeah, exactly.
So who's the greatest of all time so far?
I mean, I tweeted this last week. I tweeted this, you know, I heard that the greatest football team of all time aren't even top of their own league at the moment, to a team that haven't even got started yet.
Right.
So, as I said, you know, I do think this City team are there for the taking, but I think that when you're looking at the attitude of the fan base as a whole, you can't get over the fact that we've had one of the top starts in the Premier League era, and it feels like we're still barely clinging on. That's a really good description. I've seen people say this is Liverpool's best ever Premier League start, and it feels like we are barely clinging on. And that's a really interesting way of looking at it. But it's before the season even started, my friend who supports Spurs turned around to me and said, I can see a situation where Liverpool get 90 plus points and still don't even get close to winning the league. And that really is sort of perception, that idea that, yeah, we are having a phenomenal season, getting to the stage now because of who we're playing against, that we need to have a phenomenal game-changing, game-breaking season just to give ourselves a chance of winning the league. And that's kind of where we're at. The margin for error has almost disappeared overnight. And that's not to say that the fan base can't be more positive about it. I mean, I always consider myself to be one of the most positive fans, which is why I personally found it very strange that I was sat there on Tuesday going, I've got no confidence in this game. I've got no confidence in this midfield. It's very strange. the Napoli game in midweek is only probably the second, I think it's the second time under Klopp, well, the second time in the last two seasons that I've predicted us not to go out and get the result. The only other time I've predicted us not to get the result was against City when we beat them 4-3. So it's very, I always predict us to go out and win because I think we are a damn good side. But what I would say is that, you know, we have to contextualize it. You know, as much as we want to say, you know, this has been a phenomenal start. We are unbeaten in the league. We are playing brilliantly. But at the moment, unless we beat United, we're not top anymore. So we've got to go out there. We've got to beat our biggest rivals in a huge game. Otherwise, you know, we're no longer top. And suddenly all this talk about the bookies' favourites, all the positivity of finally getting on top, suddenly all that disappears again. And suddenly, you know, we're back behind City. And I think it's that just sort of shows that the margin for, just because we can be positive, just because we're playing really well, doesn't mean that we have that margin for error. And that's maybe why people are being, maybe not overly critical. I think it just depends, because I've seen various different, you know, when you're like me and you're on multiple different social medias, you get different perspectives. So I as I've said before, you know, I'm on, when I check out the Liverpool Reddit, they're always really positive. I always find the Reddit really interesting because everyone there is always really positive about all the players and no one really has a bad word to say. Then you go on Twitter and it's just, there's so many people who are just like, nah, fuck Henderson, fuck Lovren, fuck this, that.
Fuck Henderson, fuck Lovren, Firmino's trash, he hasn't been clicking, it's all that.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
But then there's the middle ground, right? And you know, I think it's understandable when you're playing at, say, 90% capacity, or you're dropping 9 out of 10s each week, to sort of look and go, okay, we've been brilliant. And as long as you keep in mind that we've been brilliant, how can we improve? Because that ultimately, that's what this is about, right? As much as we want, as much as we are and can enjoy when we play really well, we've still got to be looking at this and going, okay, how are we going to find that extra 1%, that extra 2%? Because we're in a tough title battle. And we need to be looking at, especially if you're being analytical, you know, you need to sort of look at it and go, okay, where can we find that extra little bit? And there's a difference between saying, I think there is a difference between saying, we've been fantastic, where can we make up that little bit more, and saying, we've been shit. Because, I mean, let's be fair, the vast majority of Liverpool fans aren't sat there going, we've been rubbish this season. You know, no one's actually arguing that. The questions are, you know, how are we going to beat City? Because, as I say, you can't ignore the fact that we could easily drop the best season in Liverpool's history and not win the league. And that is something that can't be ignored. And I understand that.
But Tom, aren't we adding extra pressure to ourselves, like as a team, as a fan base, as to constantly be watching what City's doing, especially when it's in our hands? Like, if we win out, I understand that's a grandiose idea to win out throughout the season and to remain undefeated and invincible. I understand that that's unlikely, and they're probably going to drop points as well going forward. But for me, isn't it counterproductive to constantly be, oh, we're, you know, relieved instead of happy when you win, and then it'd be like, oh, but City. It's in our hands, Tom. Literally, it's in our hands. If we just focus and take care of the business that we need to take care of, fuck what City does. Who cares? Go fucking batter them at the Etihad. Take care of that business. We extend the gap. We need to take care of our business, Tom. I don't care what Man City does at this moment in time, especially if we're on top. I think that is just, for me, it's just a waste of energy. It's a waste of it's just pessimism. It's built-in pessimism. Like, yeah, they're going to win. They're playing Everton, they're playing Leicester, they're playing Palace, they're playing Leicester, they're playing Southampton, then they play us. Our running is a lot more difficult. So if we take care of our business, we just need to focus on us. I just staring at City or caring what they do or constantly checking the scoreboard, what does it gain? What do we gain from that?
I do take your point, and I do agree with that. I mean, I agree with all of that. I think, you know, personally for me, I like to find a nice balance. I like to sort of, there'll be some weeks where I want to sit down and go, so, for example, after the Bournemouth game, I was like, yes, this was brilliant performance, brilliant result. X has been brilliant. Y has been brilliant. Z has been brilliant. You know, this week, I got back from holiday yesterday. I sat down and I wrote an article about Alisson. I wrote an article about our goalkeeper, how our goalkeeper is dead, dead good. We've got a brilliant goalkeeper. He's saving us points. He's brilliant. And there are weeks where you just want to sit down and you want to write articles about how brilliant our lads have been, or where you want to talk about how brilliant our lads have been, because, you know, we've got the best centre-back in the league. We've got the best striker in the league. We've got so many quality players. And but there, I don't think there's any harm in sort of also necessarily sitting down and sometimes going, okay, so let's look at the midfield. How are we going to improve it? Because, you know, that's how we started this pod. You know, we sat down and we go, okay, so let's talk about the midfield. Let's talk about the defense. Let's talk about the attack. And I think it's about finding a balance. You know, there will be, you know, I don't think it's healthy to sort of obsess over how City are doing all the time, but you've got to be aware of it. Do you know what I mean? You've got, you know, as much as we want to focus on ourselves and as much as we want to say it's all on our own hands, you can't get away from the fact that this is a title race. And in a title race, there are two teams in it. And as much as we're sat here going, you know, it is all in our own hands, it is all in our own hands, that's fine. It is in our own hands. But equally, City will argue it's in their own hands because they win all of their games, they win the league as well, right? So as much as it's in our hands, we also have to accept that there are two teams in this title race. And I think it's just a case of, I agree, you can't obsess. You can't be sat there screaming that City have beaten Everton because City are going to beat Everton. You know, those are the sorts of things you expect. But equally, I think, you know, there's no harm in sort of saying, okay, this is where we're at, this is where we need to be. Because, as you say, it's in our own hands. So we should be looking at how are we going to go and win every game? How are we going to go and keep it in our own hands? And I think, as I say, it's about finding a balance. It's about having a healthy dose of pessimism never hurt anyone, as long as it's a healthy dose, right? And the better we play, the more that pessimism needs to be tampered a little bit. And this is, I mean, as I say, you just need to, if you just look around and maybe you just take stock of different individuals, because there will be some people out there who always focus on the negatives, and that is an issue, but that's their issue, right? Like, you know, if those people are going to do that, then, you know, the mute button's there for a reason, the block button's there for a reason. The other thing is, let those people, if those people are going to be consistently negative, they're not going to enjoy this season. That's their issues. For me, I think it's a case of, you know, there haven't been many games this season that I haven't enjoyed. The only game I would say that I've sat out and been disappointed in that maybe I shouldn't have been is the Arsenal game, the 1-1. I was disappointed with that result. And that's maybe the only point in the season where I personally have sort of sat down and gone, okay, maybe you need to readjust your perspectives here. Because, you know, a 1-1 draw against Arsenal away from home is not the end of the world just because we dropped 2 points to City. But other than that, I don't think there's been too many wins where I've sat down afterwards and gone, I'm frustrated or where I'm angry because of the performance. I think, you know, there's always scope for improvement. It just depends on the game, right? Because for example, I'm trying to think of a good example this season. So, for example, the Spurs game where we win 2-1 and Spurs scored that late goal. The natural reaction after that should be relief, right? Because we have got a little bit, not lucky, but, you know, we've survived at the end there. So it's a little bit of, you know, the underlying thought being relief. Then there's games like the Bournemouth game where we've gone out and won 4-0, and you can allow yourself to, not allow yourself, but your natural reaction after that is to be happy, is to be ecstatic, because we've turned in a really, really good performance and we've comprehensively taken apart a really good team. So I think, you know, it's just contextualizing all these results and looking at taking each game as it comes. And I agree, you know, there need to be points in the season where you can sort of sit back and go, we're really good and we should be enjoying how well we're playing. And that's great. But then equally, there's games like the Napoli game where we play really well and your natural reaction is relief because our goalkeeper has just bailed us out of a giant hole. But equally, you can look at it and go, you know what, we played really well. So I just think, for me, it's not necessarily about one size fitting all. I think it's just about creating a social media experience for yourself that fits with how you personally see the game. And that's what I always try to do anyway. There's one or two people that I do sort of, I think there's nothing wrong with keeping people about who have opposing opinions to you as well. And maybe opposing attitudes is a better way of describing it. You know, people who are sort of a bit more like, not negative, but people who are a bit more aware of the fact that any mistakes could be the end of the world. But then equally, you've got people who go, do you know what? Nobody's perfect. We can't be perfect. Let's just enjoy the positives. Let's just enjoy the ride. And it's very telling that, you know, this week Jurgen Klopp said, you know, we didn't win the Champions League last season. Fine, but that's not the be all and end all of it. The fact is we had a great run. We had lots of brilliant moments, lots of brilliant games. And the disappointment of losing that final doesn't and can't overtake the sheer joy of getting there in the first place. Because, you know, the bottom line is we're all doing this for fun, right? That's the main thing. Right. We're supposed to be doing this. So, and we are playing well. So, you know, if you're not enjoying it, there need to be moments when you take a step back and take a bit of stock. But I think for me at the moment, like, and I mean, I have had those moments in the past with England in particular. After the 2016 Euros, there was a moment where I had to cut to take a step back and take stock of where I was at, because I was in a situation where I thought, you know what, this is supposed to be something that I enjoy. And I can't. My relationship with the English football isn't healthy anymore. But, you know, at the moment, I think as long as you are, everyone judges themselves, right? But for me, as long as you're looking at it in an optimistic way, but not necessarily, if you're not if you're not obsessing over, you know, if you're sat here obsessing over City and you're worried about every result, you're going to find yourself running into trouble. But I think it's okay to watch a City game and be frustrated when they win. I think, you know, there's a middle ground for me.
Right. No, I mean, I think I tend to agree with that. I think that there's a time and a place where you should have concern. And I mean, we, like you said, we started the podcast concerned about the midfield. We have our concerns. You know, maybe Bobby isn't clicking the way he did. His positional change and all these tactical changes as well. But I don't know, Tom. Like, for me, it's just a matter of we do this for fun, like you said. So for me to enjoy Liverpool Football Club, I can't fucking want to jump off a bridge if we draw or if we lose points or if we lose track or if we're not on track to you know, still topple City. It's just one of those things where it's fun. I love it. We all love it, obviously. That's why we do this and why we follow it. But I just feel like we are in our own heads and there's a sense of fear of failure. I mean, we're a team that has come up short time and time and time again in recent history. And, you know, for me, I'm always one that likes to find positives in situations. So as Jurgen Klopp said, I had a lot of fun last season, the run into, you know, to go play Madrid. I had a ton of fun. I thought it was one of the most memorable runs we've had in a long time. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm utterly disappointed with the way it ended. I'm not. The realism is that that's Real Madrid. The realism is that's Cristiano Ronaldo. That's Christian Bale. That's Karim Benzema. The realism of the situation is our goalkeeper was concussed. There's many issues that happened there for me to sit back and be really peeved about it because it didn't end the way it should have ended. Hell, I'm more peeved that we'd lost to Sevilla in the Europa League final a few years back. I'm more pissed off at that, to be quite honest. But I just think we have to temper expectations and. If you would have offered any Liverpool fan to be where we are right now at the beginning of the season, at the end of the Madrid game last year, they would have bit your hand off. But because Jurgen's doing such a good job, because the lads are doing such a good job, because we are building a force, expectations change. And now it just seems to be, if it's not for nothing, it's a worry. If it's not a handy performance where we're just blowing people out, it's a bit of concern, and I don't think that's a realistic perspective to have, especially in a game like football where so many things and factors come into play, where so many things go on, and now we're in a bit of an injury crisis. I think we need to temper expectations, but I also think that we are very capable of going out there, taking care of our business, and then when we meet City on January 3rd, really going out there, hopefully we'll have a few injury pieces back and we'll be full strength as much as possible. And I think that if we can get there and still undefeated against City on January 3rd, that game right there is going to be the turning point of this season. That game right there is going to tell us if we really have the mettle to go and do this. And until then, I just need to take care of business one game at a time. And I'm not really too concerned about our performance per se. If we win by one, if we win by three, if we win by four, I don't care. I just want to get by and get there and then beat them and then, you know, beat United tomorrow and then take care of that. But Tom, let's talk about the run-in now. Everton lost today to City. They play Leicester in the League Cup match on Tuesday. Then they go, then they play Palace, Leicester, Southampton, and us. So they have one more game than we do because we have United, Wolves, Newcastle, Arsenal, and City. They have a League Cup match. You know, our running is a little bit tougher. We have, some teams. Man United's a good, you know, not a good team, but it's a tricky one for us. Wolves is playing some good football. Raul Jimenez has really spearheaded that attack and made a big difference. Newcastle United, they struggle, but you never know, man. They're not expansive. They like to be compact. It could be a tough game for us. Arsenal, we need to redeem that. We need that win. I was disappointed in our result against Arsenal earlier in the season, and I think that one's the big one as well. How confident are you in this run-in? How many points would you expect us to get in the next four matches? United, Wolves, Newcastle, and Arsenal.
I'm as confident as I think I can be at this stage in the season. You'd expect us to beat Newcastle and Wolves. There's no two ways about it. The way we're playing this season, at this stage of the season, the way the season's going, you've got to be saying, really, we should be beating, I think, 4 points from United and Arsenal is kind of essential at this point. So I think, you know, we're looking at those four games and you're saying anything less than 10 points is probably a mistake somewhere. And I just think that's the way it is now. As I say, you know, we are playing really well and we are looking like a really top team. So we should be looking at these games going, we've got you know, both United and Arsenal at home, you'd expect us to win at least one of those and you know, at least get a draw in the other. And then Newcastle and Wolves are both teams you'd expect us to beat. So, yeah, you've got to be saying 10 points, really, haven't you? I'm just trying to offer something more precise than that, to be honest. We've already talked about United quite a bit, but I think, as I say, a draw wouldn't be a disaster there. But if we get a draw against United, we've kind of then got to be looking at Arsenal and saying that's a game we should be winning. So ideally we beat United first, and then that gives us the sort of the impetus to go into that Arsenal game and say, if we can make it 12 from 12, that's brilliant. If we drop points, it's not a disaster. But yeah, I mean, look, we're the second best, if not the best team in the Premier League right now. So the only game we shouldn't be looking at and saying we should be getting 3 points from that is City. That's the only team we should be looking at and saying we're not, but you know, every other game we're more than capable of winning. So we should be beating Newcastle. We should be beating Wolves. Tactically, I think we're going to, obviously, the way the games are spread out isn't too bad. We've got sort of 5 days between United and Wolves. Then we've got another 5 days between Wolves and Newcastle. And then I think the only sort of game where we might have to manage the squad a little bit is that Newcastle game, because we've got Arsenal so close. But, you know, United, Wolves, to an extent Newcastle, the gaps between the games is a bit nicer than it was sort of this time last year. So we are actually in a situation here where we can be a little bit more, we don't necessarily need to rotate the squad quite as much, which is good because we don't have the squad to rotate really. I mean, I know a lot of people say we've got a deeper squad this year, and we do, but equally we can't. City against Everton today, for example, they didn't play six of their best players. If we didn't play six of our best players, we would potentially struggle. So we do have to maybe keep it at sort of three max of our best players sort of sitting on the bench. And obviously, again, it just depends which players, right? Because Van Dijk, for example, I think is a player, we've got to try and find a game where we can rest Van Dijk, and that's going to be an issue. Salah, you know, we've got to try and pick our games where we can afford to rest Salah. But then if it's something like the Burnley game, and this is something I said after the Burnley game, you know, if we're bringing on Salah at the hour mark, that's not necessarily a disaster, because if we can keep the game at 0-0 or at 1-1 for an hour, we've then got Salah rested with a chance to then make an impact. So we've got those options there. For me, it's just a case of managing the squad properly, and we can, at this stage, we've got to trust that Klopp's good enough to do that.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. It's about managing the squad. He's got to get his subs right, like he did against Burnley. He's got to do those things, I think, in this stretch. I think if we beat Man United, though, I'm pretty confident we could take all the points, 12 out of 12, and then go into City red hot and hope that they're just a little bit fatigued with their extra game that they have with Leicester, and hope that we can go and punch them in the mouth. But I think this is a good point for us to wrap it up, Tom. I mean, I really appreciate you coming on here. I think you made a lot of good, valid points. I just want you to, you know, what do you have to plug for yourself? I know that The Rate Don't Hate will be out at the end of every game, as it usually is. But you mentioned you had something written out for Allison out. So how about you plug yourself a little bit here, Tom?
Yep. So I write quite a lot for AI. So if you do read AI articles regularly, you've probably read some of mine by now. At the moment, I've got one out on big chances, on how Liverpool are converting big chances, how many we're conceding, that kind of thing. Have got an Alisson piece out in the next couple of days. Not sure exactly when that'll be out. Probably be out after United now, so probably Monday, Tuesday. I write post-match stuff. So I normally write post-match stats, which if you follow the post-match stuff, great. Give that a read. The only other thing I want to plug is the Writers Pod, which is the podcast on AI that myself and Leanne Prescott do on the free side. That's always a really good laugh. We get great writers on each week, and we have a really nice chat about what's going on in the world of Liverpool. So if you haven't listened to that before, just give us a listen and see if you like it.
Awesome. Absolutely, y'all. And make sure you guys give Tom a follow on Twitter. It's at TomHolmes19. He's a good little follow. He's insightful. He's way more statistically inclined than I am. And then please make sure you check out his writing and his podcast. As for me, I'll be back probably next week with another one of these Anfield rants. Hopefully, we'll have a few more points in the bag and we'll be a little bit more comfortable, I would say. But until then, everybody, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for your time. And up the fucking Reds.
Podcast Network.